Hello and welcome to another episode of Start Writing. This is our second episode on plot in a beginner's guide, and it's like our seventh episode in the guide. So last week we talked about simple, last month, I don't know when this is going out. we talked about a simple structure for fixing a plot and not having a flat plot. Today, I want to share with you something a little more complex, but it's still pretty simple. But it's a structure that I use. By the way, Joe, you said you're like strongly on the architect side. I feel like I'm pretty, pretty centered. And I'll tell you a story later about how I'm a gardener. I aspire to be an architect where I just figure it all out. And, you know, I got this really solid outline, but I'm not that. I'm kind of in the middle.
I have seen your outlines, and I feel like you're far more an intense architect than I am. Because, like you have, like, this chapter, these events, you know, and I'm just like, I'm not that detailed, you know.
That is so funny.
I write my outline, and so I have, like, the big outline. The big outline just has where I'm going, right? So it's like, here's the climax, here's the midpoint turn. Here is the inciting incident, and here is the start point, right? Mm-hmm. So that's what the big outline of the story looks like. Then probably the next piece that is in place is the character arcs. Be like, okay, here's my character. Here are their current relationships with the other characters. Here is how I want them to change. Here is how I want those relationships to change. And so those then make out kind of their own little sub outlines that layer out. Then from that point, I say, okay, who is not my protagonist? What are they doing that the reader needs to see to make this all fit together? Mm. And so then those pieces get plugged in. And at that point, I'm ready to sit down and write. And so I will write the first chapter, and then once the first chapter is done, I look at all of the plot points going on. Hmm. Right now, there's a lot of other pieces. Like, those are the pieces I have to sit down and write. The truth is, there's probably about 10 to 15 chapters that I have just imagined, and I have plugged them into that outline already. And then, so usually a lot of times I'm just following that. And then occasionally I'll finish a chapter and I'll look at the outline and everything and be like, okay, the next chapter I have imagined can't go here. So what should go here to fill out my goals as far as character and plot? And so those are the chapters I have to kind of make up on the fly.
Dang, that's cool. So you just nailed, like, you just like did a sneak preview for what I'm about to talk about, but that's like exactly, that's like exactly it. And in the next episode, we'll talk more about weaving other characters together, but yeah, like you just hit the main point. So I call, this is the structure I use. This is just how I conceptualize of a story in my mind. Shoot. And I call it the plot clock. And so at midnight, straight up, we have the hook. And the hook just means we need something exciting, right? We need to show them the genre. Yeah. If it's space, get them in space and get them shooting lasers, right? Yeah. Something exciting.
Yeah.
And I honestly think your hook should just be more than spectacle. It should somehow hook into your theme where it's hinting at what's coming. And then, so that's the beginning of Act 1, right? And then Act 1 establishes home that we talked about in the last episode. Like, this is the status quo. This is how things are. The good and the bad, and it's kind of, we're going to disrupt this if we go forward from here. So you kind of got to see what things are like. And then the end of Act 1.
Have we done an episode on Hook in Chapter 1? Because Chapter 1, I find, is the most fantastically complex and important piece of the entire book.
So I don't think we've done, I can't remember if we've done a drill down episode on just the hook. It deserves it. What I just said is basically what I'm saying. So this is not the drill down episode. At least I haven't prepared that to be. But yeah, I don't know if you have more thoughts to say on it that you'd just like to chime in real fast.
So I'm actually checking right now. I'm checking.
Oh, okay.
If we had, if we've done something on.
Well, yeah. Here, so let me finish this round, and yeah, and then you can kind of like give a shout out to that episode or whatever. So at 3 o'clock, that's when Act One ends, right on our clock. There's a quarter. We're a quarter of the way into the story, and it ends with what I call the pledge. And the pledge is essentially the author is promising, here's what's going to happen. This is what the story is about. This is where in the hero's journey, this is where the hero starts the quest. It's like, this is what I'm up against. This is what I have to do. This is where I have to go. And that pledge is really important. And it's okay, basically so how... Oh, go ahead.
Talk to me about why you're calling it the pledge. You know, I see this as the inciting incident, and you know, I guess within the hero's journey, it makes sense. But I think in so many other stories, the framing doesn't fit for me. Like a survival story, like this person isn't pledging to survive; they're trying to survive. The inciting incident here is the tornado just hit, and we've got to survive it.
So two things to answer that question. I'm glad you asked it. First, this is a pledge that the author or the story is making to the reader. It has nothing to do with what the hero's pledging. This is the pledge of the story. Here's what we're promising is going to come. Mm-hmm. This is what this story is about, this problem or this quest or whatever. My other answer to that is I love the movie The Prestige, which, by the way, I've read the book too. It's one of the few movies that I say this is way better than the book. Like he took some source material and turned it into something really cool.
For me that was did you ever see The King's Speech?
Oh yeah, I have, and I love that movie.
It's a really good movie. I read the book and I was like, this is tough reading. These are actual historical events, but I mean it is not the gripping drama
That's crazy.
Character story that the movie is. Like, it was very dry, and I was like, you know, I think what really happened here is somebody heard about the story, like the actual fiction, I mean, not the, but like the actual historical events. And then they went out and found a book and then combined how they imagined this, the great challenge before this man. And, you know, turn that into a movie. Less than they read the book and said, this is a great book, let's turn it into a movie. I think it was more that this is a great story. Here's a book with a lot of details about these events, and we can turn that into a movie.
That's so interesting. I actually have a list of books that are better than the movie, so I'm going to add this to my list. That's great.
This is the other way. The movie's better than the book.
I misspoke. So. Yeah, exactly. So this is the magician. I can't remember his name. Michael Caine is the character, is the actor. But he teaches that a magic starts with the pledge, the turn, and the prestige. And I just thought those terms worked really well for this situation. So I kind of plugged them here into my model, and that's the way I think of it. This is the pledge. This is the promise of what's coming in our story. So then I have this as a three-act play. So the whole bottom half of this clock is Act 2. And Act 2 has three important events in it. So I'm going to skip to 6 o'clock is the turn. That's halfway through the story. This is some kind of plot twist. This, again, it has to be progression. There has to be something that changes so that you feel like the story is constantly new and exciting. So something at 6 o'clock has to transform expectations, and maybe the quality of the quest, or maybe the likelihood of survival, or you know, something has to change significantly at that point. And then halfway to the left and to the right, so we're talking 4:30 and 7:30. I have what are called I call them threat points. You'll hear them in the industry called pinch points, but I kind of hate that because I'm like, this isn't a pinch, like. Nobody's getting pinched or squeezed. They're about to die. Like, pinch is not, it just doesn't cut it. So I put these in as threat points. And so in the first half of Act 2, we need to see how bad the villain can be. And then in the second half of Act 2, we need to see that villain outdo himself and be even worse than before. And like, we need to see the consequences of what will happen if this quest fails or if we don't survive. I mean, if it's a survival story, show the dead, you know, the dead sibling who didn't make it. We need to see what happens if you don't make it. And we need to be horrified and scared by it. And that's going to motivate, that's going to increase the drama for the rest of the story. Okay. And then around 9 o'clock, this is what I'm calling the prestige. And it's like essentially the final act. This is the final time you introduce a new element into your plot. And then at 9 o'clock, that begins act three up till midnight again. And that last quarter of the book is your finale. All the pieces that have been set up are now in play. And that includes toward the end, your climax and your resolution. So that's the main structure. I want to talk just a little bit in detail about each of those pieces. So the first one, Joe, you were asking about the pledge. So let me back up. Did you have anything you wanted to add about the hook? I'm not going into detail with it here. To me, it seems self-explanatory that it needs to be exciting and it needs to connect to somehow thematically to your theme. But is there anything you wanted to add about the hook?
Not right now. I was just, you know, like I said, this is one of the most pivotal pieces of writing that goes in your book. I did a quick search, and it doesn't look like we have an episode or series on it. I will need to kind of look a little deeper at some of the episode titles to make sure. But I was like, at some point, we need to do something on chapter
one
because that is the bear, right? If you can conquer that beast, you can at least get people to commit to read your first book. They may not read book two if you drop the ball on the rest of the book, but they will read book one. And so, I was just saying, you know, there's a lot there, and I think there's more than a single episode worth of content worth of discussing. So I want to give it the time it deserves rather than just brushing past it.
Yep, good. And I'm so glad you're emphasizing it too, because you're exactly right. They're going to read your book if you can nail that. I just have a list of what I'm calling pledges here, but it's like a question that your story asks. So what if you fell in love with your best friend's soulmate? Right? That's an interesting question. And if you ask that question in act one of your story, you're now making a pledge that I'm going to answer that question, right? And I think I mentioned this. One of the places that I see a lot of stories go wrong is they'll ask a good question and they don't answer it well. And Joe just mentioned this. Like, you need to have a good answer to your question as well, or an answer to your pledge. In fact, I'm reading The Expanse and I haven't quite finished. I'm halfway through book 8 of 9, and I've just kind of heard whispers about how I get the sense that people don't like the ending because they didn't answer their pledge quite like people are hoping they answered it. Now, I'm not going to do spoilers. I don't want to spoil it for myself. But that's like the murmurs I hear.
I guess reading the end, I walked away with a lot of unanswered questions, but I also felt it was fitting. I was like, yes, that is a fitting end.
Cool. Yeah, I'm glad to hear it. I'm absolutely loving this series. It is so good. But it's a hard question to answer. They've set themselves up with a tricky pledge. Okay, let me read a couple more. What if you were invited to attend a magical school for wizards? Right, that's a cool pledge. And guess what? She delivered on it. She nailed it.
Yeah.
What if dinosaurs? Oh, sorry.
So the funny thing is, like, you asked that question, I'm like, I already know. And the reason I know is I read those books.
Yeah. They've answered it.
I know in great detail what it is like to go to a magical school for wizards because I read those books.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you've asked these questions, and I think to someone who has not read these books, I think these are interesting questions. But if you ask these questions to me, I'm like, oh, yeah, I know all about that because I have read these books. Yeah, this is funny.
Yeah, yeah, so
but
what
I think
if
Dinah... That's what a good book does, right, is it asks this question and you get it answered in far greater detail than you would ever even imagine it on your own.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just, it brings it to life and it becomes an adventure you've had.
Yeah. And again, the point of Act One, in my model at least, is to ask a really good question and make this pledge to your readers that this is the question you're going to wrestle with and that you're going to answer it well. So let me just read a couple more. What if dinosaurs could be brought back to life through DNA sequencing? I just think that's like the coolest pledge ever. So I recently read a Louis L'Amour book, and it asks this question. What if the Arizona desert hid a portal to a hidden Anasazi dimension? And man, when I read the beginning of that book, I was so hooked. I just loved that pledge. And to be perfectly honest, I did not love the delivery, the answer. It was fine. It was acceptable. It was good pulp fiction. But it just, I was so excited. I was way up here excited. And then the answer was like, oh, that was okay. But what if you owned a spaceship so valuable that strangers would kill you to get it? And what if we found ancient technology hidden inside our own solar system? That's the Expanse one. Okay, so that's the pledge. That's what you got to do for your pledge. Back to 6 o'clock, the turn, it's some kind of plot twist, right? We got to change things up. We got to make it more complicated. We got to make it more risky. There's something that has to change at that 6 o'clock. And I have this iPhone ad. So I think this is hilarious, but iPhone 4 comes out and their ad said, "This changes everything again." And that's kind of what you want your turn to do. Some kind of plot twist that changes everything. And hopefully more revolutionary than iPhone 4, although that was a great phone.
I was gonna say, like, it's just a slightly different phone than the iPhone 3. It's not a big change. So
yeah it's so funny. Yeah, this changes things but not everything. That's where they got too audacious. It certainly wasn't everything.
They did. It's like you have set up a promise too big for what you're offering. Yeah.
Okay, and then the prestige. We're at 9 o'clock, the end of Act 2 or the beginning of Act 3, some moment. This is where we set the last domino on the table. And after that, if you're adding pieces and some character comes in or whatever, you're going to have what's called a deus ex machina, where it's like, you didn't tell me the cavalry was coming. You didn't tell me Han Solo was still around in his Millennium Falcon. You didn't tell me these things. And so I feel cheated that this popped up in Act 3. So that's kind of your threshold where you can't change things now. You just have to let the Rube Goldberg machine play itself out. And you should have set everything up before that Act 3.
Yeah. Well, and a lot of that is what you do in editing, right? Making sure all of those pieces are in place before the climax. You know, I think it was Neil Gaiman, as he put it, he says, editing is the process of making the climax look like you did it on purpose.
Dude, that's a great quote.
Looks like you, or is it maybe, or like making you look like you planned it that way. Mm-hmm. Didn't the first time, but you know, by draft 4, yeah, it's starting to look like this was the plan all along.
Dude, that's great. So as I was preparing this, I guess you can call it a lecture. Can I call this a lecture? I just popped open Jurassic Park, the film, and I started like, well, you start the movie and the hook is, there's a raptor in a cage, but guess what? They never show us anything but the eye. Okay. So there's kind of a pledge right there where they're saying there's dinosaurs here. And you want to see them, and they're coming, but we kept it hidden. That's that mystery that Joe was talking about in the last episode. Like, there's this mystery that is taunting you. And
I understand, you know, you're talking about the movie, but I feel like movies are a really bad pitch on hook, because before you walk into theater, you've seen trailers, you've seen posters, are already hooked before you walk into the theater. And so, you know, even though they do only show you that eye, you've probably already seen dinosaurs from the trailers. You know, you have all of this info beforehand.
And so it's interesting.
You know, picky.
As a reader, I feel like I can watch Jurassic Park, and I've seen it a ton. I can still, like suspend my disbelief and just imagine like I haven't seen him yet. And somehow I can kind of fake myself into that mindset even when I've seen a trailer. But the truth is, your movie trailer or your synopsis on the back of the book, it's going to give away Act One, and hopefully it gives away your pledge. They should know what the book is promising before they start. But that doesn't mean that Act One is boring. It should still be engaging and interesting for them to access. But there shouldn't be a lot of surprises if they know anything about the book before they've started. So this is, I talked about theme, and I thought this was interesting in the hook for Jurassic Park. The scene is literally, we have a human who was caught by this cage that malfunctioned, and the scene ends with the guy saying, shoot her, like shoot the raptor. It's better to kill the raptor if we're going to save this human. And so right there, the theme is set up in the hook. It's like, either the dinosaurs survive or the humans survive, but they are not both going to survive. And I think that makes it, yeah, it's a pretty dang brilliant hook because it sets up the theme of what's coming.
Yeah, the you cannot coexist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And again, I mean, you're right that we've all seen the dinosaurs now. We're, I don't know, 10 episodes into the Jurassic Park films. but it's not a surprise now. But at the time, that was a pretty... I love that they don't show you the T-Rex or the raptor. It's just the eye. And it's like, this is coming. So keep watching. And it makes you really excited.
Well, and I think... so this scene is actually pulled directly from the first chapter of the book. Mm-hmm. And part of Crichton setting this up is raptors were not like... you know, a big thing talked about in the dinosaur world. Everybody talked about the T-Rex, you know, and so in introducing this, the hook and the mystery he's setting up is here is a creature that is clearly not a T-Rex. That is not how big this cage is. Mm. And it is very deadly and very dangerous, and it is very intelligent. And that's the hook he's setting up in the book, because it is Jurassic Park that gets everybody talking about raptors.
Hmm. Yeah, that's actually really cool, and I hadn't thought of that in my structure here. Which, by the way, so
because you'd seen all, because you'd been exposed to all this, see a cage and a killer inside, you think raptor, and you don't realize that the reason you think raptor is because of Jurassic Park.
Yeah, yeah. So all I did to set up this little, the 5-point breakdown is I just clicked at like 25% through the movie, 50%, and I was going down to the minute, by the way. There's different ways to think about plot, and Joe, I think if you hadn't seen what I wrote here and you tried to pick your 4 plot points or 5, you probably would have picked different things as the structure. But and I guess the moral of that is just that the having a plot structure should help you as an author. And it doesn't mean everybody has to see the same structure. It just means it needs to help you progress through your story and keep readers progressing. Anyway, so I clicked on the 30 minutes, and that's when Hammond says, we have a T-Rex. And this is all still setting up. We've hardly even seen dinosaurs at a quarter of the movie in. But we've set that promise that we're about to see Jurassic Park. And then the first half of Act 2, the next 30 minutes of the movie, is kind of slowly getting, like you see the big brontosauruses, or I know it's not that, but you kind of get hints at it. But then it's not till 60 minutes into the movie, which is exactly halfway, that's when the ride breaks down. The T-Rex gets out. And that's the big twist, right? I mean, at least in this structure. It's like we can't contain these dinosaurs. And then the prestige, I clicked on 90 minutes. I can't remember what it was, but it seemed like it wasn't significant. So I had to go 2 minutes ahead, and that's where they're talking about, hey, we got to shut down the system. We're going to turn the whole park down, which means anything can get out, but we have to do it because we're all going to die. Like we're literally at our wit's end. And so, yeah, let's shut down the system. And that's like, it's toward the end. Well, it's like the, yeah, it's probably the last quarter of the movie, a little more than that. that the raptors become a significant factor. And we start to realize that there's something more terrifying than a T-Rex, as terrifying as that is. Anyway, so that's Jurassic Park kind of broken down into this structure that I'm using. I wanted to talk about the pinch points. So when the ride breaks down, the T-Rex gets out. The Sam Neill, I can't remember his character right now. He and Timmy, they get away. And it's not a good threat point to say, you know what? You might have a close call with a T-Rex. A close call is not enough. Like, if we're going to show the threat, we need to show you can die from a T-Rex. And it does that, right? We see the lawyer die. And then we see Newman die. I can't remember his character. And then we see the hunter, like the toughest guy at Jurassic Park, gets killed by the raptors. He gets killed. It wasn't just a close call. He gets killed. And we see these characters dropping off. And it's very literally showing us this is what happens if you fail in this quest. And that's what you want to do. Don't show them a close call. Show them this is what happens if you fail your quest. And anyway, I thought it does great with those threat points. I just, again, kind of to reiterate, I wanted to look at Star Wars. This one I didn't do by the timestamps. I was just kind of doing it by memory. But again, our hook starts out with spaceships and laser guns. Act one is on yes. Tatooine. Sorry, I think you had a comment.
I was going to say, like, the opening scene of Star Wars, like, literally is a giant, you know, spaceship shooting and chasing a little one. It's great because immediately, like, it sets the setting and the tone, you know, and then we have fighting aboard the ship as they board it as well, right? I think it is so good in just setting up the setting right from the get-go and the premise, right? Be like, this is, as our title promised, Star Wars.
Yeah, it delivers and it hooks you just right off. And especially for 1977. We hadn't seen stuff that cool before. And yeah. So Act 1, we're mostly with Luke. Although it jumps back and forth with him and Leia. But Act 1 essentially happens on Tatooine. And I think this is a cool aspect of Star Wars. We get three very distinct settings. And I think that's a good lesson to learn. If you're struggling to have a clear sense of progression for your readers, try having each of your acts in distinct settings. So we literally left this place and now we're in this place. And that's going to help illustrate visually for your readers that, yeah, we are progressing. Things are changing. Anyway, I just love that the three settings are Tatooine, the Death Star, and then the Trench Run. And by the way, I didn't check my spelling on these planets, so I apologize to any Star Wars nerds if I spelled Tatooine or Alderaan wrong. okay, and then the pledge of the story, Luke gets his family, his uncle and aunt are destroyed. His reason for staying there is now gone, and he decides to leave home. That's our pledge, this hayseed kid going out on an adventure with this Master Jedi. There are two threat points that came to mind. Alderaan is destroyed, so we see that Vader and the Grand Moff Tarkin have the power to literally destroy a planet. And that's pretty intense. To be honest, I don't think Star Wars lets us feel that very well. That's a big deal.
I do feel like it kind of moves through that moment a little quick.
Yeah. Well, and it's we don't go into Leia. Leia is the one who should be suffering from it. And I think I've talked about this on another episode, but she doesn't really mourn. She just kind of keeps going. And I think if we saw her grief, we could feel that threat point a little more. Anyway, at the bottom of the hour, 6 o'clock, my big twist is that they, while they're on the Death Star trying to escape, they realize that the princess is there. The one who started this quest, who sent the message to Obi-Wan, she's there, and they can save her. And that's kind of the big twist. Then in the second half of the of Act Two, Vader kills Obi-Wan. So now it's like, okay, these guys are serious. They will literally kill you. And now we're on our own. We don't have our mentor.
Yeah. I was going to say, and now you're on your own.
Yeah, yeah. So we're starting to see, yeah, this is how bad things can be if we don't win. And then we move into the third act where Leia says they put a tracker on our ship. They now know where our base is. And again, we don't suddenly learn, oh, and the Death Star can blow up a planet. We already know that. We learned it before. And that's really important that the dominoes have all been set up. And we get into Act 3, yeah. And it's like, okay, now watch them all fall down. And we see Luke, you know, his abilities with the Force and the Death Star threat, and all that comes to a culmination. And, well, and Han Solo popping in at the end. We knew what he was, and I guess I hope we're not too surprised that he pops back in, and we're like, you know what, I thought he was a good guy all along. He seemed pretty cool.
Yeah, I thought he was a good guy all along.
Yeah. But okay, so that's how I've plotted my novels, and
I really like your concept here of the prestige. This statement, at, you know, 3/4 through the novel, be like, nothing new. You can't introduce any new elements. You have to use what you've already introduced. Now, editing lets you introduce those things earlier that you need, right? If you're mm-hmm. writing and be like, I need this, you can just write it in there in the early drafts. You just need to, in the editing, be like, okay, I've got to introduce this earlier.
Yeah, but I really Neil Gaiman style.
It's a big, big component. Be like, you can't bring in anything new anymore.
Yeah. And again, your readers will feel cheated if you do. So just make sure it's set up before. Man, to be honest, I wish we could field questions from listeners. So if you have questions on this, I'd love to address it in the next episode. This is how I think about it. This is how I wrote X-Dot. I kind of had an idea of how these were in mind. I did the same with Song of Locke, and I did the same with Star Child, although in the next episode, I'll talk how I kind of developed this model for a more complex story, but this is how you follow your hero. If you're just doing a one perspective story, I feel like you follow him around this plot clock and you're going to come off pretty good. Before we wrap up, let's see. I just wanted to add two quick, kind of side notes. I recently learned that there's some Asian story structure that's called Kaisho Ten Ketsu. And those four words are basically the four parts of the plot. And for me, I've watched a little anime and the Studio Ghibli films. And I'm always a little bit surprised. I'm just like, there's something different about this plot, and it's hard to put a finger on. It's still engaging, but it's not the typical structure that I expect. And the reason I'm mentioning this here is that there are other ways to have progress and to make readers excited to see the drama that unfolds. So if you're curious, this might be something to go research, but it intrigued me because it was pitched to me as a plot structure without conflict. And I actually kind of take issue with that, that it doesn't have conflicts, because I think it does, but it's different. It's a little bit different than what we expect. And I think it's kind of good to learn from some of those other models that maybe the way we Westerners think about it is not simply the end all be all. Another reason I popped this up is for them, the Act 3, this is a four act structure, and Act 3 is called the twist, where somehow you change things and something unexpected is thrown into the mix of what you've set up so far. And that kind of changes the story in an exciting way.
Well, So in case they're only listening to the episode, let's walk them through the chart. So the four pieces it breaks into is key, the intro, show, development, 10, twist, and conclusion, ketsu, right? Mm-hmm. And so these are the four pieces it breaks into, the four acts it chooses, as opposed to how we talk about them.
Yeah, and so, I mean, I'm not really qualified to go too deep into this, but like, so Act 1 is your intro, you introduce the characters in the world. In Show, the Act 2, you develop them and you show that they're more complex than what you saw at first glance. And then in 10, Act 3, there's a twist. So it's like, well, not only are they more complex, but this crazy thing happened and it changes how the whole world works, maybe, or how the whatever system works. And then, yeah, the conclusion is just kind of how all that plays out. But, yeah, it's interesting, and I kind of like that it actually lines up with my model in some interesting ways. And then I just wanted to close with this kind of a personal story, but when I wrote X Dot, this is my first novel. I'm figuring out how to do this, and I figured out this story structure thing, so I had the points of the clock in place. I kind of knew, again, from a high-level view, what needed to happen. And so I can't remember what plot point it was, if it was 3 o'clock or 6 o'clock, but I knew that they discovered that. So this is like these two buddy, it's like a buddy kid story, grade school. And I knew that they discovered something important in this old barn that was, it's like this old scary barn that they sneak into that they're trespassing in. In my novel, as I'm writing on the ground floor, boots on the ground, I just write, they find the artifact. And I use that word, the artifact. And I didn't know what it was. And I kept writing the story.
Interesting.
And then the gardener in me got to act. I'm on the ground. I get to act 3, the finale. And I'm writing the very end of the book. And I'm like, oh my gosh. I know how the story ends. I didn't know like how it would play out. I kind of knew, but not, you know, just the high level view. And suddenly I realized the artifact is a Zippo lighter. It's a Zippo lighter. No. And so then, like Joe's talking about, I got to go retroactively find and replace. The artifact is the Zippo lighter, right? And so now I have this lighter in there, and the lighter matters at the end of the book. You see the fire on the front cover, but.
Yeah.
So that's kind of an anecdote about how plotting, like architect and gardener, can work together. And for me, sometimes you make these discoveries when you're on the ground, and then retroactively you can fit it in and make your story work. And like Gaiman said, you surprise your readers, and they think you knew it all along. So that's what I got for our second episode on plot. Again, if you listeners
second
have,
and third,
yeah. If you listeners have any questions, I would love to address them in the next episode, and you probably have a few weeks before that gets produced. So hopefully you can get those into us soon. You'll see our email in the show notes. Buy our books if you're curious. We'll have links to those.
We're still
as well.
Learning too. You'll see us bumble some of these things in our earlier novels.
Yep, it's true. And that's all I've got for today. Thank you so much for listening. It's time to start writing.